Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the NOAA Monthly Climate Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Should you require assistance during the call, please press star then zero, and an operator will assist you offline. As a reminder, your conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host, Don Bateman. Please go ahead.
All right. Thanks so much, Lois. Good morning, and thank you for joining this monthly climate update call, part of the suite of climate services that NOAA provides to government, business, academia, the media, and the public to support informed decision-making. I'm John Bateman with NOAA Communications, and I'll be facilitating the call today. If you have additional questions after the conclusion of today's call, my colleague John Leslie and I can both be reached by email at, and I will spell it, nesdis.pa@noaa.gov. That's nesdis.pa, as in public affairs, at noaa.gov. Today's update will feature two short presentations, followed by an operator-assisted question and answer session at the end. A copy of the presentation our speakers will follow can be downloaded from the link in the media advisory. And with that, I will introduce our speakers. Our first presenter is Ira Sanchez Lugo, a climatologist with NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information, who will provide a summary of the August 2024 U.S. and global climate report, as well as the latest drought monitor update. Our second presenter is Scott Handel, a meteorologist with NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, who will provide the latest El Niño-La Niña update, as well as the October 2024 outlook and the U.S. seasonal outlooks for temperature, precipitation, and drought through December. We will now kick off this media briefing with Ira from NOAA NCEI.
Thank you, John, and good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. I'm going to go ahead and start on slide two to look at the global temperatures for August 2024. As you can see from both maps, during the month, we saw that warmer than average conditions were present across much of the world's surface, with record warm temperatures that were present across parts of Europe, Africa, the Caribbean region, parts of the Atlantic Ocean, Asia, Australia, and Antarctica, as well as areas of the Indian Ocean and parts of the Western Pacific Ocean and the Southern Ocean. There were some locations that did experience near to cooler than average temperatures during the month, and these areas included parts of the Russian Far East and Western Alaska, much of Argentina and Chile, and parts of Central Africa, as well as parts of Asia. Averaged as a whole, the global surface temperature for August 2024 was 1.27 degrees Celsius, or 2.29 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average. This value was the warmest for August in NOAA's records that extend back to 1850 for a total of 175 years. And this value was just 0.01 degrees Celsius or 0.02 degrees Fahrenheit above the previous record that was set last year in 2023. This month also marked the 15th consecutive month of record high global temperatures. Looking at continental averages, each continent had a temperature anomaly for the month of August that ranked among the top six warmest Augusts. The continents of Europe and Oceania had their warmest August on record. Moving now to slide number three to look at the seasonal temperature for the globe. The global surface temperature for the three-month period of June through August was 1.24 degrees Celsius or 2.23 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average. And this was the warmest June through August period since NOAA's records extend back to 1850. Again, this value surpassed the previous record that was set only last year in 2023. The June through August period was warmer than average across much of the globe, as you can see from the maps. Record high temperatures were present across parts of each continent and oceans, with near to cooler than average conditions that were limited to parts of the Russian Far East, Western Alaska, Eastern Antarctica, northern and southern parts of the Atlantic Ocean, and southeastern parts of the Pacific Ocean. The month of August marked the end of the Northern Hemisphere meteorological summer and the Southern Hemisphere meteorological winter. And the Northern Hemisphere had its warmest summer on record. The Southern Hemisphere had its warmest winter on record. Both hemispheres surpassed the previous record that was, again, set last year in 2023. Regionally, each continent had a sea level temperature ranked among the warmest June through August period. Europe, Asia, and Australia having their warmest through August period on slide number 4 to look at day-to-day temperatures. The global surface temperature for the period of January through August was the highest on record at 1.28 degrees Celsius or 2.30 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average. And this value surpassed the previous record that was set back in 2016. During the first 8 months of the year, they were characterized by warmer than average conditions across much of the globe, with record warm temperatures engulfing much of the Atlantic Ocean, Central America, the northern half of South America, Europe, Central Africa, the North Indian Ocean, the Western Pacific Ocean, and across parts of Asia, Australia, and North America. Regionally, South America, Europe, and Africa had their warmest January through August period, while North America and Oceania had their second warmest. There were some areas that did experience near to cooler than average conditions during the first 8 months of the year, and these areas included parts of the southeastern Greenland and its surrounding ocean, the southern tip of South America, and the southeastern Pacific Ocean and eastern Antarctica. Looking ahead, according to our statistical analysis, the year 2024 is virtually certain to rank among the 5 warmest years on record, and it has over 95% chance of ranking as the warmest year on record. Moving now to slide number 5 to look at the U.S. for the month of August. During August 2024, temperatures were above average across the western and northeastern contiguous U.S. Meanwhile, near statewide average temperatures were observed from North Dakota to the Carolinas. Averaged as a whole, the U.S. had an August temperature of 74 degrees Fahrenheit, and this is 1.9 degrees Fahrenheit above average. This value tied with August of 1998 as the 15th warmest August in the 130-year record. In terms of statewide averages, 5 states had a top 10 warm August, with Florida having its second warmest August on record, and Texas and New Mexico having their third warmest August. However, no state had a statewide average temperature that ranked among the 10 coldest August. In terms of precipitation for the month, it varied across the U.S. We did see above average precipitation along the East Coast, across the Central Rockies, the Northern Tier states, and from Northern California to Washington State, while below average conditions were present across much of the South, from the Southern California coast to the Central Gulf Coast, extending into the Ohio Valley. The states of Alabama and Mississippi had their driest August on record, and Tennessee had its second driest August. Meanwhile, New York had its fourth wettest August on record. During the month of August, we did see some tropical systems that did impact the U.S. and its territories. Briefly, some of these included Debbie, that made landfall as a Category 1 hurricane early during the month in northwestern Florida, and then made a second landfall as a tropical storm in South Carolina on August 8th. The storm brought heavy rains, flooding, and strong winds to parts of the southeast. We had in Puerto Rico, tropical storm Ernesto, which brought significant flooding and caused nearly half of the island to lose power due to its strong winds during August 13th through 14th. Then we had Hurricane Cone that impacted Hawaii at the end of the month, causing flooding and power outages. Moving now to slide number 6 to look at the seasonal temperatures for the U.S. The summer average temperature for the contiguous U.S. was 73.8 degrees Fahrenheit, and this value is 2.5 degrees Fahrenheit above average, and this ranked as the fourth warmest summer in the 130-year record. Currently, the summers of 1936 and 2021 tie as the warmest summer on record for the U.S., followed by the summer of 2022. Temperatures were above average across much of the western U.S. and from the Gulf Coast to the Northeast. The states of Arizona, California, Florida, Maine, and New Hampshire had their warmest summer on record. An additional 20 states had a statewide average temperature that ranked among the 10 warmest summers on record. However, no state had a statewide average temperature that ranked among the 10 coldest summers on record. The summer precipitation for the contiguous U.S. was near average during the three-month season at 8.30 inches. We saw above-average precipitation across portions of the upper Midwest and in parts of the Northeast, Southeast, Gulf Coast, and Central Rockies. The state of Michigan saw its fifth wettest summer on record, while West Virginia had its fifth dry summer on record. Other areas that had below-average conditions included the Ohio Valley to the Gulf Coast, from the Northern Rockies to California, and across portions of the Central and Southern Plains. Moving on to slide number 7 to look at the year-to-date. For the January through August period, the contiguous U.S. average temperature was 56.9 degrees Fahrenheit, or 3 degrees Fahrenheit above average, and this ranked as the second warmest January through August period on record. Only the January through August period of 2012 was warmer. Temperatures were above average across nearly all of the contiguous U.S., with the states of New Hampshire, Vermont, and West Virginia having their warmest January through August period. And then we had an additional 25 states that had a top five warmest year-to-date period. The year-to-date precipitation total for the contiguous U.S. Was its 10th wettest in the 130-year record, with a total of 22.93 inches. Above-average precipitation was observed across a large portion of the upper Midwest, the Northeast, and Deep South. Rhode Island, Connecticut both had their second wettest January through August period, and 9 additional states ranked among their top 10 wettest year-to-date. Precipitation was below average across parts of the Northwest, Northern Plains, and Central Appalachians, and Western Texas during this 8-month period. No states ranked among the 10 driest year-to-date period on record. Moving into slide 8 to look at current drought conditions across the U.S., as of today, about 36% of the continental U.S. was in some type of drought. This is about 12 percentage points more than a month ago. And during this drought period, drought was present across parts of the Western High Plains, Southern, Midwest, and Southeastern regions. And there were some drought conditions that did improve during the last month across parts of northern parts of the Western region and across parts of the Southern region. However, drought did deteriorate across parts of the southern parts of the Western region and across the Midwest and the Southeastern regions. Outside of the contiguous U.S., moderate to severe drought was present across parts of Hawaii, while Alaska had abnormally dry conditions across parts of its panhandle. And Puerto Rico remains drought-free. That is all that I have for today. I will now turn it over to CPC Scott Handel. Thank you.
Thank you, Ahir, and good morning, everybody. This is Scott Handel, meteorologist from the National Weather Service Climate Prediction Center. I'm going to start off by bringing your attention to slide 9 of the presentation with the current observations and forecasts for the El Niño Southern Oscillation. The figure on the left shows the current sea surface temperature anomalies for the tropical Pacific. The horizontal black line in the center represents the equator. The blue shading represents areas where sea surface temperatures are below normal, and the orange and red areas correspond to areas where sea surface temperatures are above normal. As you can see, there's a lot of light blue and light orange near the center of the map, indicating that, on average, sea surface temperature anomalies are currently weak near the equator, with a tilt toward below normal temperatures in the eastern and central Pacific and above normal in the western Pacific. Sea surface temperatures in what's called the Niño 3.4 region of the tropical Pacific are roughly 0.2 degrees Celsius below normal, which puts us into neutral territory, which means that we are currently not in an El Niño or a La Niña state. However, sea surface temperature anomalies are slowly becoming more negative, and once these sea surface temperatures reach 0.5 degrees Celsius below normal, that would put us in La Niña territory. Therefore, looking into the future, an emergence of La Niña is the most likely scenario as we head into the fall and winter. and we are currently in a La Nina watch, which indicates conditions are favorable for La Nina to develop. The chart on the right indicates that there's a greater than a 70% chance of La Nina developing during the September, October, November period, and a greater than an 80% chance of La Nina as we head later into the fall into the winter. However, a strong La Nina event is unlikely this year, with only around a 10% chance of it reaching that level. Therefore, thereafter, a transition to the neutral phase of El Nino southern oscillation is the most likely outcome as we progress into and through next spring. Now, moving from the tropics to closer to home, I'd like to draw your attention to slide 10, which represents our monthly outlooks for the month of October. These outlooks represent the probabilities that the mean temperature or total precipitation for the month will be below, near, or above normal. The red and orange shading on the map to the left indicates areas where above normal temperatures are the most likely outcome, while the blue shading indicates areas where below normal temperatures are most likely. Looking at the map at the left, above normal temperatures are favored across the southwestern and northeastern parts of the lower 48 states, as well as much of Florida and northern parts of Alaska during the month of October. This is especially true for the northeastern contiguous United States and extreme northern Alaska, where there's greater than a 50% chance of above normal temperature. This anticipated warmth is due to a variety of factors such as trends, model guidance, influences from the Madden-Julian oscillation, and below normal sea ice extent in the case of Alaska. On the flip side, parts of southwestern Alaska are favored to have below normal temperatures, due in part to transient below normal sea surface temperatures in adjacent waters. Looking at precipitation, the areas of green on the map on the right indicate regions where the total precipitation is favored to be above normal for October, and the brown areas represent regions where below normal precipitation is the most likely scenario. Below normal monthly total precipitation amounts are favored for much of the Great Basin and Southwest, eastward across the central and southern Rockies and plains, and parts of the central Mississippi Valley. Above normal precipitation is favored along the East Coast, much of the northeast and southeast, and across the eastern and central Gulf Coast. A tilt toward above normal precipitation is also indicated for parts of the Pacific Northwest and for western and northern Alaska. Dynamical model guidance, recent trends, and the Madden-Julian oscillation contribute to this outlook. In the case of the southeast and the central and eastern Gulf Coast region, the potential for tropical activity also contributes to increased probabilities of above normal precipitation. It should be noted that probabilities in all locations are modest due to the low predictability common during this time of year. Now, looking further ahead to the three-month period from October, November, and December, I'd like to bring your attention to slide 11. During this period, the potential impacts from La Nina become more apparent, but generally warmer and drier than normal weather favored across the southern part of the country. However, an exception to this favored dryness across the southern tier is the white area across the southeast on the map on the right, where the potential for tropical activity early in the season may counteract the typical dryness associated with the La Nina later in the season. Farther to the north, increased chances for warmer than normal conditions extend north across the eastern contiguous United States, consistent with recent trends. Guidance has generally trended wetter across the northern contiguous United States, so above normal precipitation is favored for much of the northwestern contiguous United States, Great Lakes, and Northeast. These areas of favored above normal precipitations generally correspond with the anticipated La Nina-based state. Conversely, La Nina tends to favor cold for parts of Alaska. This, coupled with below normal sea surface temperatures adjacent to western Alaska, leads to a slight tilt toward colder and drier than normal weather for much of southern Alaska. Milder than normal weather and above normal precipitation are favored for northwestern parts of the state, consistent with recent trends and below normal sea ice extent. Wrapping things up with the drought outlook, I'd like to bring your attention to slide 12. The brown areas in the map indicate where drought is currently ongoing and expected to continue. This includes much of the southwestern United States and parts of the Great Basin, eastward across the southern and central plains, and northward to the northern high plains. Ongoing impactful drought conditions are also noted across much of the Ohio and Tennessee valleys and much of the central and southern Appalachians. Additionally, with the dry pattern favored for the central and southern plains, drought expansion is likely for these areas represented by the yellow shading. On the flip side, drought improvement or removal is likely for the northwest, parts of the Great Lakes and northern Ohio Valley, parts of the southeast, and eastern portions of the central Appalachians. That's it from the Climate Prediction Center. Back to you, John.
Thanks so much, Scott. We will now take specific questions from the call participants. Please be sure to identify who you'd like to answer the question if possible. And Lois, could you please remind the call participants how they can ask a question, and then please queue up the first question.
Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press a 1, then 0 on your touch-tone phone. You will hear an acknowledgement tone that you've been placed in the queue, and you may remove yourself from queue at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the number. Once again, if you have a question, please press 1, then 0 at this time. And one moment for our first question. We have a question from Rebecca Hersher from NPR. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks so much for doing this. I just had a quick question about the number of consecutive months for global record temperatures. I wanted to make sure I heard Ira correctly. This is the 50th consecutive month. Was that for land and oceans or just land?
Okay, so I'm going to repeat it. It was the 15th, and it was for both ocean, combined global land and ocean.
Great. Thanks so much. And if I could just ask a follow-up.
Sure.
Do we have any sense of why the ocean heat seems to have, like, the record streak seems to have ended, even though the streak has not ended for the globe as a whole?
Okay. So you're asking why the oceans are so warm, correct?
Yeah. And why the ocean streak has ended, even though the land plus ocean streak has not ended.
Yes. Okay, let me double-check something really quickly. But it's a combination of both. The climate change, the temperatures continue to increase at the ocean level, and we see that at the land. And right now, I want to say, if my memory doesn't fail me, the global ocean for the month of August, let me see really quickly, was second. So even though it wasn't record warm, it was still near record, so it was still significant. Does that make sense? Yeah, it was second warmest for August, so it was still significantly warm, even though it didn't surpass the record that was set last year.
Great, that's super helpful.
Does
thank
that
you.
Make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, and once again, if you do have a question, please press 1 then 0. And we have a question from Doyle Rice from USA Today. Please go ahead.
Oh, yes. Good morning. Thanks for doing this. I had a question. How close are we to 2012 as far as warmest year on record in the U.S.? I know you said from January to August we're number 2 behind 2012.
Yes, so 2012 surpassed, so we are about 1 degree Celsius, 1 degree Fahrenheit behind 2012 for the year to date.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And again, if there are any questions, please press 1 then 0. And at this time, there's no further questions in queue.
All right. Thanks so much, Lois. If there are no further questions, I'll wrap up the call. First, I'd like to thank all of our speakers for their time and everyone else for participating in this conference call. I'll end by reminding you all to mark your calendar for a few upcoming events. The release of the September 2024 U.S. Climate Report and Billion Dollar Disaster Summary is scheduled for October 8th. The release of the September 2024 Global Climate Report is scheduled for October 10th. And in lieu of our monthly media climate call next month, NOAA will host the 2024-25 U.S. Winter Outlook media briefing at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on October 17th. Again, next month, in lieu of our monthly media call, NOAA will host the 2024-25 U.S. Winter Outlook media briefing at 11 a.m. Eastern on October 17th. A media advisory will be issued and posted online ahead of that event. And lastly, an audio file of this call will be posted on the NOAA.gov media advisory site later today. And if you have any further informational needs, please feel free to email me, John Bateman. My contact information is available at the top of the media advisory. Thanks so much.
Thank you, and that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using AT&T Teleconference. You may now disconnect.